What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Many of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, which is my effort to find the most interesting people in the world and sit with them for hours while I ask questions in an effort to learn. So it would mean the world to me if you would subscribe to the show on your favorite audio platform, watch episodes on YouTube, and tell your friends and family about the podcast. My goal is to help millions learn from the world's most interesting people. So let's get into today's episode. Today's episode is with Trevor Bacon. He is the co-founder and CEO of Parcel. In this conversation, we talk about where they're getting all this real estate data from, how they want to help you trade on real estate prices without actually having to buy or sell real estate, and what the world will look like as real-time real estate data comes to the market, trading becomes more popular, and something like Parcel ends up becoming more successful. It's a fascinating conversation that lives at the intersection of technology, real estate, financial markets, investing, and the macro environment. All those things are things I'm interested in, and many of you are as well. So I cannot wait to hear what you all think of this conversation with Trevor Bacon.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Today's episode is brought to you by Espresso, the maker of the world's thinnest portable display. Now listen up. If you're like me, you feel like you are at a command center when you sit down at your desk. I got a gazillion tabs open and different windows for different activities. There's my web browser, my text messages, I have Slack open, and I got a notes app. I normally work on a desktop and it can be very, very productive. But everything falls apart the second I leave my desk. If I'm traveling, if I go to a coffee shop to do some work, or just want to work from the kitchen table, my laptop doesn't have enough screen space. I lose my command center and my productivity falls off a cliff. It's a major problem. But this is where Espresso comes in. They have a portable screen that is so beautiful that you think Steve Jobs came back from the dead to create it. The thing is incredibly light, it comes with a nice stand, and the user interface is so easy that I figured it out. How to do it in less than 3 minutes. If you listen to this podcast, you know that's not an easy feat. So the Espresso team and I, we became friends. I got to know them because I really liked the product. And those screens, they now want to offer them to any fan of the podcast. So we struck a little deal. Here's how it works. Anyone who listens to this podcast can go to us.espres.so, or that's too confusing, just go click the link in the description. If you go to Espresso's website, they've got a brand new offer there sitting for you. You get a little discount and you'll get a beautiful screen. Trust me, I use mine every day. You'll love the Espresso screen and I think it'll make you more productive. Go check them out today by clicking on the link in the description. This episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Do you like making a profit from sports betting? Well, set yourself up to take home the most profit possible using crypto to fund your sports betting, casino, and poker account at betonline.ag. You can avoid costly transaction fees, get your payouts lightning fast, and do it all securely and anonymously with the highest deposit and withdrawal limits in the industry. If you want to get in on the action, do it the smart way with crypto at betonline.ag. Head to the website, sign up with promo code POMP100 to get 100% bonus on your crypto deposit today. If you go and you deposit, they'll give you 100% bonus if you use promo code POMP100. Bet Online. The game starts here. BetOnline.ag. Go check them out today. All right, guys. Bang, bang. I've got Trevor here with me. Trevor, the data sucks coming out of all of these real estate and government organizations. It seems like they are, one, delayed, two, inaccurate at best, and three, being used to make really, really important decisions. So when you look at all of the data environment when it comes to real estate, like, why is it so bad? Is it just that entrepreneurs haven't yet attacked this space, or what's going on?
I think, well, first off, thanks for having me. I think the main reason, there hasn't been a reason to have real-time accurate data for real estate. Obviously, transaction times in real estate can take months. Decisions are lengthy. And Parcel Labs was initially created to be the underpinning of a trading platform that allows people to get exposure to real estate price movements in cities and neighborhoods in the US and across the world. So that requires data that is trusted, accurate, and real time. And that is what Parcel Labs is built to do. So we'll continue to build on that trust and provide more transparency into the real estate data space.
So talk about this trading idea. You're basically saying that people can trade on prices, but not actually have to take possession or ownership of the actual assets themselves?
Yeah. So my prior life, I was a portfolio manager at a couple of hedge funds trading in technology stocks. During COVID, there's a ton of real estate volatility. And the idea came to me and one of our co-founders, Kellen, was, you know, I wish I could get long Miami and short New York without actually having to buy and move and relocate. And so that's where the idea of Parcel came to be. Effectively, Parcel, the application is a blockchain application, a decentralized application where you can get exposure to real estate and basically bet long and short using the Parcel Labs price fees as the reference price. So if Miami is $560 a square foot based on Parcel Labs data, that price goes onto the blockchain. And you, if you pump or bullish on Miami or bearish, you could express a view. That's effectively what it is. The reason why it's really attractive, so real estate's not surprisingly the largest asset class in the world. There are no truly liquid derivatives to hedge exposure, gain exposure, whereas effectively every other asset class has a way, corn, orange juice, oil. Like, every asset class has some form of derivative. It's strange how the largest asset class does not. And that's what the problem that we're attacking.
And is the argument the derivatives and the financial instruments don't exist because the data is not available to make them? So it's almost like you're getting to the root cause by trying to go get the real-time data?
I think that's one of them. You know, the current standard, and there actually is a contract on the CME, which is based on the Case-Shiller. So the Case-Shiller is widely cited as kind of like the gold standard for house price indexes. That updates once a month, but on a 2-month lag. So obviously a lot happens in that time frame. You know, in both economic and crypto, you know, that's like 10 years. So a lot happens. It's so at the time of update, it's almost irrelevant. So I think that is one of the best cases for why it hasn't taken off. Additionally, we leverage something called perpetual futures on the trading platform, which is something that is enabled by blockchain and is an elegant way to implement something like this versus a standard dated future.
When we see these housing data providers and people who are kind of publishing this stuff, it seems like we're just ignoring what's actually available. You know, I always joke that the government tells us one data point, but then I can go on and look at a Zillow or a Redfin or any of these platforms, and they have, I don't know, 100 million data points that are changing every single day by the minute, you know, being updated. How do you think about like what data sources you guys go and look for? How do you evaluate whether they're accurate? What is real time to you guys? Like, just talk a little bit as to like, where are you getting the data from and how do you actually decide, yeah, this should be included and this shouldn't be?
Yeah, it comes from hundreds of different sources. I think, you know, the government records are important to us. So we do use those, except those are lagged. So, you know, if a house is sold, it could take up to 6 months to actually have that recorded at the county level. We use that more as a reconciliation layer. And then you can collect real-time listings across the web. And so the one difference, I guess, to your point on like cleanliness is like we have every property in the country and in parts of Europe right now indexed at a parcel ID level such that they're not reduplicated because when people are inputting, there's just a lot of different definitions. So four bedroom or studio B, apartment B, like things are double counted all the time. So part of the data cleaning process that Parcel Labs undergoes is to make sure that there's address resolution across a single unit. So there's no double counting. So, you know, in short, that's basically how we make sure that the data is right.
And what is your vision for like what people are trading? Is it just pure speculation? Like I want to go long New York, short Miami, or vice versa? Or is it actually like a hedging component where people within a city may use these instruments, you know, to kind of protect themselves?
Yeah. I look, like, I think the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? Like the part of our thesis is just like, do you think that derivatives or exposure should exist on real estate? Right. And so far, there's been a lot of interest from a variety of players where there are some hurdles to actually entering the US and we're kind of waiting clarity, but we've received interest from institutions. So you see people with some exposure to real estate, people wanting to hedge their rents. You know, obviously, at the end, this kind of leads to institutions being able to hedge their exposure of on the ground real estate, much like they hedge every, you know, their stock portfolios or commodities, et cetera. So that's where it ends, I think, which is institutional exposure to real estate derivatives. And, you know, there's a ton of other things you could do with it. Like you could offer it as a product. A wealth manager can offer it as a product to people. You can have rent, like over time we'll have rental price fees. So if you think your rents are going up, you can get long on rents on parcel. You know, there's a million ways you can slice and dice it once you actually have it. You could have insurance, right? Like you could insurance on real estate as well. So yeah, you know, we just recently crossed $1 billion of volume traded. So, you know, that's like the first milestone to getting into institutional, just in the eyes, in the eyesight of institutions. And then we'll we have some partnerships coming up that will open those doors further.
And recently there's been a lot of, I think, attention on prediction markets and, you know, a number of these things that almost feel like they're tangential to what you guys are doing, but they're in either different sectors or they may have kind of different ways to express certain opinions. How much of this do you think you can build out and it becomes, you know, really kind of true trading? And the reason I start thinking down that path is like, well, if you get this like free market and people are actually expressing their views in it, that is a data point. Like that can actually inform a lot of things. And so like, is there a world where local governments start looking at what's going on and saying like, why is everyone short our city?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like maybe we should make changes or like, you know, yeah. How do you almost think of like the data points and the output and the information that's generated from the trading that then could be used for a variety of things?
Yeah, I mean that's the once you're big enough, you are the price, right? So the more liquidity that comes on, the more traders, the more mindshare and trust that we have, the more it can be part of the psyche in terms of both pricing of real estate, right? That's important. You could actually use it, a realtor, someone could look at it to say, what's the sentiment now? Most people are short. Maybe we should lower our listing price, et cetera. It becomes part of the psyche, much like it should be included in inflation numbers, right? Like the real estate is like, or shelter is a large component of inflation, but it's hyper lag. So, and then policy decisions are being used or made off of that lag data. So, once it's in the psyche, it can inform both like the actual physical real estate market, as well as policy, both from maybe a federal government perspective, as well as state and local being like, you know, once enough people have vested interest, especially renters, because they don't own, you start to get a little more equity in the markets, right? Because you actually care if you're invested, even on parcel in Chicago. You know, you're financially aligned if you're expressing a long bet for that to go up. So you want good things to happen in Chicago. There are perverse incentives on the way down, but you could really understand from a social sentiment perspective, maybe on Twitter or something, like what's trending and why. We get that sometimes now. You know, people will, I'm short Chicago for X, Y, and Z reason, and it starts to like, and then someone's like, oh, I'm short my whole city. You're short my whole city. Like, you know, there's like a great banter or meme that can go on with it. But I do think once you're big enough, you know, you can really own the narrative from a real estate perspective.
One of the most interesting developments in real estate and kind of trading that intersection in recent years was in New York City, the L that goes to Brooklyn was going to be shut down and they were going to do improvements. And so where the L
kind of entered Brooklyn and people could get off, a lot of those units and real estate was tanking in price because people were like, hey, for the next year and a half, 2 years, people aren't going to be able to use this line. And so there's this huge problem. As most things in New York, the plan did not go according to what was outlined. And so they end up saying, hey, we're not going to shut it down. And all of a sudden, prices jacked back up very quickly. And I remember Matt Levine from Bloomberg writing a piece being like, wait a minute, there's a bunch of transactions that occurred right before that announcement. Are people, quote unquote, like insider trading on information?
Yeah.
And his conclusion basically was like, look, it doesn't meet the criteria of like, you know, material, non-public information, blah, 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 whatever. But man, it is a tough thing. If you have this piece of information, you want to express a view, you got to go like get real estate deals done.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And you like, need a lot of capital, right? It's like
correct.
A ton of capital.
And then which ones do you buy? Like, you know, escrows, getting the debt, like, you know, it's just very hard. And so it feels like what you guys are building, once you get all the regulatory approvals and all this kind of stuff, kind of fit into this need where people may actually be able to use information that they have just in their daily life or paying attention to the local government or whatever and express views without all of that friction. And if you can get there, I got to think that's a pretty liquid market. And there's a lot of people who'd be interested in doing that.
Yeah, totally. And then if you could, I agree. And then if you can start to get more micro, which is possible, it becomes a little more, you know, as so we have New York City, for example, you can have, I think that deal that you're talking about was like the Upper East Side. So you could carve the Upper East Side out, right? And then that could be the instrument in which people are betting or hedging against. And it would actually start to indicate probably like the odds of the L getting, you know, completed or not in a backward way. So yeah, I think again, like once you can, once it's more liquid, you can actually get a little more granular such that you can get like more of the micro economies even within New York City is a little bit unique in this case, but there's because each neighborhood is totally different. But you can start to bet on like, you know, Hudson Yards would be a good example of hedging or I think once it's liquid enough, the possibilities really are endless.
How do you think about risk? So there's like, I'll call it like tech stack risk, including getting the data, cleaning the data, you know, presenting it, et cetera. And then there is like risk with what people are doing with the data and insights that you have. So like, how do you guys try to mitigate any of the risks that you've already identified?
Yeah, risk is very, very important. You know, it's like it's probably the most important thing to mitigate from, especially around security. So on both sides, Parcel Labs, again, is the real estate data arm of Parcel. Recently, so we effectively only make that data available to the blockchain in which we interact. And then we continuously undergo audits for security. So there's that, you know, from a internal policy perspective, no one on the team is allowed to use the data or trade on the platform. On the platform itself, they're just continuous audits. So if anyone's familiar with blockchain, you know, it's our product's a smart contract based product. So on the smart contract, you continually undergo audits. We've gone through two, we'll do another and just continue to undergo security audits. And then anything with code that is used in the product on the blockchain undergoes an audit. So that's one of the bigger risks, or if not the biggest, for what we're doing is smart contract risk.
Now, I know that you guys are working with Resi Club and Lance Lampert over there. He absolutely loves the fact that you guys have such nuanced data, which makes me think there's kind of this weird world where trading and media actually have a lot of the similarities in that they're trying to find data. They're trying to express views. There is a new hedge fund. I don't know if you saw this, but there's this new hedge fund that came out. It's a media company and it's a hedge fund. And what they are going to monetize media, since media companies are struggling so much to monetize, is the investigative reporters will go do investigations. They will write the articles. They will send it to the hedge fund. The hedge fund will put positions on and then they will publish the articles. And so, again, you can imagine there's A lot of debate and controversy over like,
yeah, that sounds
whatever. So I won't ask you if you guys are going to do that, but the data is really interesting. It's like, is there a world where actually, yeah, you have a trading platform, but like you do have insights that probably would be pretty interesting from like a data and a content or a media and a content perspective. Have you guys thought about what to do there? Or is that part of a marketing strategy or how can you use this, you know, from like an insight based perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've had our content actually is how we've reached many people. And the team puts out content that basically showcases the data. That is how, for example, Lance eventually we formed a partnership with Resi Club. I think for distribution like that, we'd rather empower someone like Lance, who is probably the best real estate journalist and media person that we've come across. So we kind of empower him to he has an audience that we know is interested in real estate. We can distribute through someone like Lance. There's other types of, not on the media side, but there's other partnerships like that where you're distributing the data and kind of showcasing what you can do. I do think there's an opportunity to align the real estate data with trading more, you know, just like we probably wouldn't have recommendations given that I'd say like we need to remain neutral. But you could see, you know, just like Wall Street banks all have equity research. Why do they have equity research, both for banking, like new IPOs and M&A, but also to drive trading volume? They upgrade, downgrade stocks every day, and then eventually, you know, call their clients with those calls and then hopefully drum up some business. So I could see a similar, like maybe not us, but as we continue to grow, businesses being built on Parcel. Basically, you can have people creating research reports for various cities and trade ideas, try and monetize that or get people to invest with them in some sort of fund capacity, where we're just providing the data and the platform and an ecosystem and economies being built off of that.
And when you start to see that $1 billion of volume has already been traded, like you've got kind of information, insights, you know, media, et cetera, you obviously are trying to build out the trading side. Like, who are these people and what other data are they using to trade with?
The amount, so over 300,000 people. So it's pretty vast. You have, people, that, are just trying out the product for the first time or using, the way in which they're using data is, it's kind of a black box to us, given that, we don't track that per se, but, we have done some pretty detailed user interviews with like the largest traders and, you know, their use cases vary. It could be that they actually own properties and are hedging, and you know, if they own properties, they also know that area better. So you could see someone accumulate more trading volume. It's very broad. I don't have a great answer for that. The goal is for the trading platform and the Parcel Labs API over time to become more integrated. Such that there's more free-flowing data communication between the two to allow traders to make more informed decisions.
And then what about like the real estate agent community? Are they tapped in yet? Do they realize like this could potentially be pretty valuable for them and something that they can use? Or is that still an area where you guys got some work to do to kind of convince them?
Yeah, it some work to do. I would say that they... the real estate industry as a whole is a little more slow moving, and convincing new data sets or new offerings takes time. So that's why it's right now. It's about the first step is proving that our data is the most accurate, real time, transparent. We also are unbiased. Right. Like I think a lot of other data producers have some they want the market to go up, right? Or they want transactions to happen. If it goes down, transactions slow, they don't get paid. So we're completely unbiased, which I think over time engenders trust.
It's funny because as I've learned more and more about the real estate world, definitely there are some people who I've literally been in meetings and people have been like, we do not talk about market slowdowns.
Yeah. I mean, if you're getting paid on transactions, right? Like I've never seen a Zillow's estimate that's like down 10%. Like they're always not like nothing against them, but like it's like down 1% at worst. Because if you said over the next year, the prediction's down 10%, I'll wait a whole year when it's cheaper and then nothing would happen in that market for a year, right? Everyone would just wait. It's like, so, it's a flywheel. It's a pretty resilient. I will say that it's been really resilient.
What on the regulatory front, like what are the things that you guys need to do in order to kind of get to the world that you want inside the United States? Obviously, internationally, you guys are making a lot of progress, but in the U.S., like, is there certain organizations that just got to give you a thumbs up, or how does that work?
So on the blockchain side, there's just not a lot of clarity. There's some bills that have been hung up in Congress. It seems like they're still not making progress. But basically you need some sort of framework. So what we are considered, or the parcel protocol is considered DeFi or decentralized finance. The way that we're thinking, you know, the ETF on Bitcoin got passed, that makes sense, right? It's half of the whole market. So, you know, $1 trillion or more is Bitcoin. So that's like the first chunk that they took out, like the biggest market. The next one seems like stable coins. That's should be fairly, I don't know if the probability that gets done, I think it's like in the middle. It should get done, but that's straightforward. It's dollars, so that's not so crazy. DeFi is more complex. There's decentralization elements. There's teams and that have, you know, ownership, but also are decentralizing in a progressive fashion. There's a lot of complexity. So it makes sense that it's the last. But as of right now, there's no rule set to really comply with. We'd love to comply, obviously, whatever that means. If it means bringing down leverage or having KYC or whatever in the US, we'd be happy to. But right now, it's just not even at the point where you can have the discussion. So whenever that discussion is open, we'd love to have it and offer a product that's suitable to US users.
And then you mentioned leverage. What are people doing internationally?
The international is up to 10x leverage. 10% down on a home, in other words. We can raise that higher. I think in the US, to be under regulation, it'll be lower.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense, right? It's like people expect the United States to be, quote unquote, more regulated, both in terms of what they allow from a limitation standpoint, but also just the hoops that you're going to have to go through to get the approvals.
Just on that note, like the U.S. consumer is less, they're like risk seeking kind of, but they wouldn't want like 100x leverage, I don't think. It's a very small subset. They want like trusted and safe. So.
It's funny when I do a search on Twitter or X for parcel. There's incredible excitement, and I obviously can't tell like who's in the U.S., who's not, because most of the people don't have like their locations or whatever. But it is fascinating to see something as quote unquote boring as like real estate data.
Yeah.
Meeting the like literally, I was looking at one of the tweets and he's like, me and my boys waiting for the parcel drop.
Yeah.
Like those two worlds colliding in exactly. This like very unique way.
Yeah, it's fun. The blockchain community, yeah, we do kind of have both of those elements, like data, modernizing real estate data, and then the Web3 community is fascinating. And they're great. Like, you know, it keeps us on our toes every day. They're fun, funny, and demanding because you're always building in public, right? So
we have 50,000 plus in the Discord always asking questions, which is great. And we love them. But it keeps us on our toes, and you know, crypto is 24/7. So, you know, we're, it forces you to grow and adapt quickly.
My last question for you is the Parcel intern.
Oh,
I've seen that all over
shout
Twitter.
Out. Yeah.
Is that you guys or is that somebody else?
No, it is intern? We won't say his name, but so I spoke at the everyone thinks it's us, but we're not, you know, we're all right, but he's really good. So I spoke at a university's blockchain club. He reached out and then for me to speak there, and then he would just hound me. He's like, I want to intern for you. I want to intern for you. I like wouldn't get back. And you know, he just made it happen, and he became the intern. And then he basically interned this summer, and then he went back to school and just decided to create the intern account. And then he does this. That's actually him. And he like checks in on you know, what to say and what not to say, but he's very, like, he's a self-starter. So we'll have the drafts ready and we just have to approve. But
dude, yeah, he's tweeting multiple times a day. Like he's in it.
All day. Yeah. He's luckily he's abroad. So right now he's studying abroad. So, you know, you wake up and he'll have everything set for the day and he'll be responding, but you know, great, highest ROI investment I think we've had. One of.
Amazing. All right. Where can we send people to find you on the internet, or if they want to find out more about what Parcel's doing?
Yeah. So Parcel, P-A-R-C-L, is the Twitter handle. Parcel.co is the kind of like the brochure site or the main website. The application is app.parcel.co. For Parcel Labs, it's parcellabs.com. Parcel Labs Twitter is Parcel Labs. And then myself, it's Trevor J. Bacon on Twitter.
Awesome. I'm super excited with what you guys are doing. The data alone is fascinating, but then you add in kind of all the trading and everything. I think there's a lot of opportunity here. So I appreciate you doing this, and we'll do it again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.